Hades is a game where you learn as you play, and we strongly recommend experiencing your early runs on your own to enjoy everything without spoilers for the first time. This podcast will assume you have reached the final boss, unlocked all the weapons, and met all the characters. Any additional spoilers will be disclosed in the episode. Thanks for tuning in. Hello and welcome to Hidden Aspects, a podcast about Hades. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and this week we are joined by Wrist 13, speedrunner, coach, and roguelike master. Wrist, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I only play one roguelike, so I'm not sure if I have earned that title, but...
Slay the Spire!
Not really. I've gotten to Ascension 20, but I can't beat the heart at Ascension 20 and at all yet, so...
I would bet we'd still place you in the upper echelon of skill just by the nature of getting to A20, but we'll talk about that anyways. And listeners, we'll be getting to know them in a bit, but you can get to know everyone by following our social media accounts in addition to following us on whatever podcast platform you like. Jack is out at Hidden Aspects on Twitter. Join our Discord. And, Wrist, let's get to know you a little bit more. Tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background with gaming in general?
It's a little tumultuous and kind of weird. I used to play, so what's the first game I ever played in my life? The big one that I played probably was RuneScape when I was a kid. I was wandering the library, I was looking over some kid's shoulder, and he was playing this game called RuneScape. Oh man, amazing. Like, that looks really cool. And I quickly was corrected in what the name of the game was, and I begged my parents for $5 a month for a membership. They foolishly agreed, and, that was sort of what I played. I was never much of a variety gamer in that sense. Like, I had a PlayStation, and I sometimes played, you know, some other games on it, but I mostly was, like, a dedicated gamer. Like, I'd play RuneScape, and I'd, like, immerse myself in that. And then I went to church when I was young, and in the youth room, we had a GameCube, and on that GameCube, we would play Mario Kart, and I would destroy everyone in that. And then I'd go on from that to League of Legends, which was a very dark period of my life.
Ugh.
Where I learned that friends can become enemies in very real ways. And you can yell at your friends for doing like perfectly reasonable human things and get angry about that. So I left that part of my life behind, and I've since sort of bopped around on Steam, picking up random games. I played a lot of Darkest Dungeon. I played a little bit of Slay the Spire, Path of Exile, so on and so forth.
Quite the diverse history, but yeah, it sounds like these are all, I'm going to call them games that are capable of being lifestyles. Any of these games can be the only game you play at that time and have enough depth to reward that. League of Legends, perhaps the extreme example of that. The majority of League players, it's the only game they play just because of the sheer depth there. But also, yeah, the toxicity involved in League of Legends is really something.
The toxicity is easier to find in League of Legends just because, well, doing something competitively isn't something you can just... It's a skill, right? You have to practice doing that. And the first time you do something, you're not going to be very good at it. So I imagine for... a lot of people, it's easy, like, because League of Legends was free. I think it was I feel like it was the first, maybe it wasn't the first, but it was like the biggest free MOBA for a while, and probably still is. So it was easy to get into, and League and games like it encourage competitiveness, and you know, has a young audience, and the audience has yet to, you know, really grow up. And so we have this mixture of competitiveness and immaturity just sort of swirling around in a sea of anonymity where we can sort of do or say whatever we want on the large without the kinds of consequences we'd expect in like the school hallways or at church or in front of our families or whatever.
It is the perfect storm to allow people to play out base impulses without any kind of external accountability that really matters. So glad you got out.
Yes.
Glad you escaped. And then the Steam games you talked about bopping around, Slay the Spire, Darkest Dungeon, and of course, we're on a Hades podcast, we're going to talk about Hades. Definitely a bit of affinity towards roguelikes. Is there anything about that particular game style, that archetype, that speaks to you in a particular way?
It's probably more of a necessity than anything else. When I was younger, I never really played shooters, so I never got that sort of skill set. Same sort of deal with RTSs. I never like rewired my brain to think with my fingers in that kind of a manner, like remembering all those hotkeys and having like huge actions per minute. I like being able to stop and think and sort of make more deliberate actions. And a lot of roguelikes seem to be conducive to that. This isn't necessarily true for Hades. And a lot of what I learned in Hades was sort of a new experience for me, like precise inputs and those precise inputs mattering. That was something that I had to like learn in order to, you know, be any good at the game at a really high level. Roguelikes always sort of got me. I love the strategy. I love the idea that something is designed to be beaten, and that even though it's difficult, if you fail in that endeavor, you can use the information you learn from failing to succeed later. Is, I guess, what makes it so interesting to me.
The focus on player mastery and the idea of failure being a lesson is definitely something that game design has drifted towards in the past 10 years, in part due to the rise of roguelikes, in part due to the, well, really, Dark Souls has really pushed that. But, you know, Dark Souls is a different kind of experience that doesn't always respect your time, and roguelikes are... You know, usually at least a full completion is on the shorter side, and a death, you don't really necessarily lose anything, or at least the lesson that you gain is as valuable as the progress lost during that run, that sort of thing. But yeah.
I like that. I like the audacity of Dark Souls sort of being like, hey, you know, if you want to fight this boss again, you got to walk for about 30 seconds. So it is a very, you know, walk of shamey sort of game, and the games have sort of toyed with that. You know, they drifted here and there from the severity of those walks. I feel like Bloodborne was a lot more forgiving, and so was Sekiro, but I still respect it.
Sekiro had its ups and downs. There were a few parts in Sekiro where, especially in some of the early bosses, you had to stealth kill five or six enemies before you got to fight the boss again, and the boss would kill you in three hits. So, you know, it's definitely a game of, like, you need to figure this out. Sekiro is probably the non-Hades game that has come up the most in this podcast, oddly enough.
Oh, has it? Interesting.
Yeah.
It's nice that Miyazaki got to show us his affinity for rhythm games, disguising it as a Souls game.
It is absolutely Guitar Hero, but, like, except if you mess up, you just die immediately.
Yeah. It's the Dark Souls of Guitar Heroes.
Yes, it is. It's also the FromSoft game that I most want to like and I most suck at. So, like, it's so beautiful and so fun to play when you get it right. And when you're bad at it, the game is like, you're so bad, your friends are getting sick. Like, what are you doing? But anyways, we're not a Sekiro podcast, we're a Hades podcast. How did you find out about Hades? How did you stumble into it, and what drew you in?
I am trying, even now as you're speaking, I'm trying to remember exactly how I stumbled upon it. It was probably one of the streams that I watch. Oh, I know who it was. There's a variety streamer named Celerity. He, you know, he played a lot of Darkest Dungeon. He played a lot of Slay the Spire. He plays a lot of... He's basically a roguelike variety streamer. And one of the games he played was Hades. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool to watch. So I picked it up and I played it. And I found Halion on YouTube. And I watched his streams. I was like a big regular on the stream. Like for a while, all of his videos, you basically just see my name in the text box. And for a little while, people were like, hey, are you that guy in Halion's videos? I'm like, yeah, I am. And yeah, that's how I both found and got into it. You know, first the game attracted me, and then there's some individuals around it attracted me as well.
You can call that community. You can call that, in general, a larger community.
Yeah, I guess so.
And this was a while ago, right? Did you get in, like, Are we talking Nighty Night update or earlier than that?
I showed up at the Long Winter update, if I remember correctly. It was in about the middle of it, so... And I don't remember exactly what it was or what came out of it. The Nighty Night update got, like, the other side of the mirror or something, I think.
Long Winter is Demeter. That's the winter.
Yes. Oh, okay. Right. Well, when everyone else got to see Demeter for the first time, I got to see the game for the first time. So
there you go.
That was it. I don't know when that was in the year, but yeah.
It looks like the big changes there, the top three changes were Demeter, Guan Yu, and fishing. So, you know, very important. And then, and then Nighty Night is Green Talons and Fists.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Fists. Mm.
I imagine that the Fists getting added to the game was just a lot of fun. But, you know, I speak as a dedicated Fist gamer. Was there anything really crazy or broken back then that now just 1.0 players would not believe was in the game? We were actually talking yesterday about Chaos Shield, about old Chaos Shield, which apparently was much better.
See, I'm trying to think what was... It's weird because thinking about what was broken back then doesn't read as well. Like our sensibilities as far as what's broken and what's not have changed.
Game knowledge is so different, right? Like, just what we know now.
Yeah. Like, for instance, in terms of speedrunning anyway, like Guan Yu was the spear that we would use. Although this is also, I think, before... before Achilles got its buff, it used to have only two charges instead of what it has four now. So it was made way better. But stuff like that. Spread fire was really good. It's still pretty good now, but it didn't come with any ammo reduction.
Oh.
So you just have like all of your shots. You would usually still play on. I think we'd still play on Zagrail or Aeris. And you could play on Aeris and have 12 shots and just do a whole lot of damage. The AoE used to be bigger. The base damage used to be 50 over 40. It was really bonkers. That's probably the thing that stands out the most in terms of what was broken. Chaos Shield is weird because it's more of a high heat thing. And while I got my start in high heat, I never used Chaos Shield because, like, okay, this is the weapon that everyone else is using. I'm going to try to use some different weapons. And I did. It was painful. And as time went on, it became clear that if you wanted to have a reasonable chance at getting too much higher, you'd have to start using Chaos Shield. Although, again, based on what we know now, maybe we didn't. And maybe that's just what we thought.
But at the time, it seemed like it was the meta pick. You know,
meta was different.
It became clear as well later on that maybe the devs thought some weapons were underused, so Aeris came out the door at 1.0 with an 8-second buff, and, well, the rest is history.
Well, the 8 seconds was always there. In fact, the only thing that changed was the damage increase going from 60% to 75%, which really isn't that big. It's funny, the buff actually surprised us, because right before 1.0 release... we were starting to notice, and this is largely thanks to Bablo, one of our like fastest and probably most consistent high heat / speedrunners, that Aeris was really good. And he was like, hey guys, 60% global damage for the low price of hitting yourself with your special. It's actually really, really powerful. And so when they buffed it, we were a little surprised. But the reason why it was buffed, we were told, is because... you know, people weren't using it very much. So if you buff something, you're sort of putting it into public perception. People saying, hey, maybe this is good now. When in reality, it was always good. So
yeah, that makes sense. And it just became a little bit more visible, I suppose. So were you initially focused on any particular competitive goal, or was it just something about the game's depth of competitive options that spoke to you?
I think it would be a lie to say that it was the game itself, or rather the game only. Obviously, Hades is a great game, but sort of like, I guess, the allure of a small yet dedicated community was strong to me at the time. I just finished with college, and I wasn't really sure what to do. And, you know, I made the very responsible decision of choosing to spend my time playing a video game instead of doing other more life productive things. And that was, I would account for about half of it. the other half was just because, you know, I was hanging out in Halion's stream and he was talking about, and back then, like, 40 heat was really high, or it felt high because no one else had gone higher or bothered to go higher. And he did a run where he did like 41 heat or 42 heat. He was like, oh my God, it was so difficult. No one will ever beat it. And then I went to work and I just grinded it. And I came back like, hey, I have a 43 heat. I was like, oh, I'll do 44. And we kind of went back and forth. So a goal kind of came about organically, and it was fueled by my desire to do something that I could dedicate a lot of time to and enjoy, for better or for worse.
It was an outlet at the very least, and and one that was effective at every minute you gave it, it took it, right? Because there are some outlets where the time becomes a diminishing return, but if you were grinding out and successfully just cranking up that heat a little bit, then it sounds like it was effective at what you needed it to do at the time.
It was sort of effective. It sort of goes back to what we were talking about with League of Legends, and how, you know, a lot of people go into a competitive environment as amateurs, and spending so much of my time and focus on this like competitive aspect of a game, maybe because I was coming into it with age or experience, but I was quickly recognizing actually that, you know, there are these diminishing returns, right? Like when you get another heat record, it's like, you know, it's a hit. It feels good. Like I'd go at something for a week. I'd be up thinking, oh, am I ever going to finish this? Like, it's so hard. And when I get it, it's like the best feeling ever. And then you don't know what to do. Yeah. So, so it's kind of actually, like, if you don't know how to handle it properly, it's a really vicious cycle, and it was actually the cause of a lot of stress for me for a while. So that was kind of why I abandoned the high heat thing, and I became interested in speedrunning. With, you know, like the Hermes Cup, I was reached out to be one of the first runners in Hermes Cup number one, and I kind of did it just for whatever, because I wasn't a speedrunner at the time. I just played high heat, and I was kind of in a weird in between where I was known in the speedrunning community and like by other speedrunners, but I wasn't like a speedrunner. I didn't play for speed, and Hermes Cup was kind of how I got into that. So my competitive goals have sort of shifted as time went on.
It's interesting that the reason that you pushed heat speed is because you were invited to a speed tournament, a running tournament, when it was something you clearly had the skill set for, but hadn't been practicing it the same way that, you know, when you look at people, Musaeus and Vareem have been just running speed forever, for a long time.
Yeah, well before me.
Mm. Yeah. But you were just like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And if I recall, Hermes Cup number one actually went pretty well for you.
Yeah, I ended up winning. I ended up beating Vareem and eventually JDN. It was unexpected because, as I said, it started out as something where I was just sort of, hey, you know, this is fun, I'll do it. But as it got further and further, I was like, okay, I can actually win this, so maybe I'll take it more seriously. And I did. I got very lucky. I think that can't be understated. Something I mentioned at like when I won was that, you know, even though I've managed to win, a good number of players here could have very easily won as well, because Hades, in addition to being a game of skill, also has a lot of luck involved. And when I beat Vareem, he got a very unlucky, and I got lucky enough to win. So that's, I think, always important to acknowledge when like comparing other speedrunners and racers and stuff, especially in a tournament setting.
Yeah, it's not a question of a skill set outlier. It's a question of a high skill base combined with the right roles and the right execution with what you get. And decision-making in the moment based on variance is very important, but also sometimes they get tiny vermin and you don't. And what you gonna do?
Yep, or you can be Vareem and get 2-4 sacks or something. Ugh. I think it was 2-4 sacks. This was before we modded out sacks. In fact, I think that was the inciting incident that caused us to say, okay, maybe we should moderate the amount of sacks that we can get. And so we went from being able to get 2 to 5 sacks to 2 to 3. And yeah.
that seems better. Because, yeah, when the variance is that significant, there's still enough factors, like sometimes you hit a duo, sometimes you don't, sometimes you get Than, sometimes you get Tiny Vermin. There are enough factors that we don't need one person to get a 2-sack and the other to get a 5-sack. That just kind of trivializes the entire experience. But yeah, and Hermes Cup is awesome. I'm sure that most of our listeners have watched it, but if you haven't, it's definitely worth checking out. It runs, what, once a month-ish or so?
Once every fortnight. We're taking a bit of a break because if we were to keep in the once a fortnight pattern, the next Hermes Cup would happen on New Year's. So we opted out of that, and it'll be continuing on, I think, the 15th of January, whatever the next Friday is after that.
And then from heat to speed, and from being around for so long, you are pretty visible in a lot of aspects of the community. And something I've learned, coming from a different game, Hearthstone is very much a Twitter game, and Hades is very much a Discord game. People, this game's community lives in various community Discords, and you're in all of them. So how did you get so involved?
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. What does it mean for a game to be a Twitter game? Like, I don't understand what that actually doesn't mean anything to me. What does that mean?
So on where information is disseminated and where the majority of conversation takes place, Hearthstone is a game where the developers are on Twitter, the pros are on Twitter. It's where big conversations happen. It's where information is shared. You know, in a game like Hearthstone, you can share a deck list in a single tweet, and then that's enough for things to spread. That's kind of where information cascades start. Whereas in Discord, it seems the conversation is longer form, and Hades is much more about that kind of localized groups having larger conversations over longer periods of time.
Okay, fair enough. I never use Twitter, so my concept of what Twitter is and what it's used for is limited to very specific kinds of things, like posting pithy comments or thoughts. But I imagine also, based on what you're saying, you can have, like, you know, whole Twitter threads, whole like conglomerations of like-minded individuals all commenting and chat. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but I've never been a part of something like that before.
Yeah, it's don't do Twitter. Speaking of someone that Twitters a lot, it's not worth it.
Yeah, but I do like Discord. I guess I'm glad that we're sort of a Discord community. As you said, I'm in a lot of the Discords. I don't know. I just like to stay connected, I guess. Part of it's, in a weird way, part of it's like for professional reasons, because I'm in the Hades community and I do it fairly actively. I like to know what's going on. And if there are any names or players in the community that I don't know about or that I want to frequent or maybe hang out with sometime or something, I would like to be there. So I guess that's the general motivation for me being in so many places at once. The main one, of course, being the Hades speedrunning Discord, which is hopefully where all of the speedrunners have eventually congregated.
Yeah, it seems to be the place to be, and definitely, you know, has a vibe of its own, and the High Heat community as well. And it was interesting. I've been hanging out in the High Heat community mostly to help them with spreadsheets, because I don't do High Heat runs, or at least I have not gotten to the level of successfully clearing at that skill level. And it's very, very active, but there are like 10 or 15 people that are really involved. Like, it's super active, but these are tight-knit groups that in different servers it's the same people most of the time.
Yeah. The same thing could be said for streams. I don't know if the joke has been made lately, but I know, especially before 1.0, whenever there was a Hades stream, you could find the same 5, 6, 7 people in Twitch chat, and you know, people would know, it's like, oh, you're here too, haha, there you are. And so, you know, obviously people would know your name, and again, that's, it sounds selfish, but that's one of the big reasons of being in those. Like, I mean, I'm sure that you just want to make your voice heard on whatever. If there's like a big Twitter thread going, you know, you feel sort of obligated to make a tweet or respond or reply or whatever you guys do on Twitter in that environment. And it's kind of the same for me, which, not to say that, you know, I don't enjoy the people or what have you, but it's also, you know, part of what I'm supposed to do as someone who's trying to pay attention to what's going on in the community.
So part of this is like the house party phenomenon where it's the same people at different houses, right? And it's just like, you know, when you all have a party like in different sequences, it's the same friends are the same friends. And yeah, part of it as well is the people that are more visible in the community are part of the reason that they got that visibility is by both being skilled and opinionated. And those characteristics don't go away as people gain notoriety. They usually increase.
Yeah, usually magnified a little bit, probably.
Yeah. And sometimes not having an opinion is an opinion of itself. Sometimes saying, you know, like, it's, people can talk about this, it doesn't need to concern me, or, you know, other people have said it well. But other times, yeah, like you said, being visible comes with people expecting you to have a perspective. And usually that means that you've been pretty good at having a perspective.
I'd hope so.
I think so, but, you know, I'm biased. So let's do some lightning round questions. If you had to pick a favorite aspect, what would it be?
It's probably Beowulf, honestly. Can I get a little bit into why?
I know it's
a lightning round, but okay. So in the first Hermes Cup, actually this came about as sort of an idea from me, and I'd actually give most of the credit to Crasher Core, a name you might know. If you've thumbed through the high heat areas of Hades, you're probably familiar with the spreadsheet.
The old spreadsheet, yeah.
Yeah, that's his. And we were actually, I think, we were the very first round to ever play. And we decided, because there are no rules or limitations on what we could race, we just did three weapons. We're like, okay, let's choose the same weapons, and let's race them at the same time. So, like, you know, we play Talos Fists, let's both race Talos Fists at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of stuck. And so for the first Hermes Cup, every round would be a different series of weapons that you'd have to practice. And I, for my race with Vareem, got Beowulf. And Beowulf, we knew nothing about it. It was, as best as we could tell, it was garbage, right? It's slow. It's big and chunky, and the hammers don't make any sense because they're all special hammers, like Charged Flight, which increased your damage by 400%, and it was broken. Now it's down to 200, but so it's not broken anymore. Ooh, but
with the heavy throw, was 400%, man.
Oh yeah, it was busted. But we didn't want to rely on those hammers. So we're like, how do we play this? And so for like just a week straight, we would play it, and then we'd go through this cycle of like playing and practicing it, and then we'd complain to each other and everyone else about it. Like, oh my god, just end me! I don't want to play Beowulf anymore. And then finally, it clicked, and we figured it out. And Vareem used Aphrodite's cast, and I used Dionysus' cast, and that was very successful for me, and I was also pretty lucky because the original build was pretty risky because you had to find an additional cast stone from Chaos.
Were you using Stygian Soul?
Yeah. And so fast forward a few months to maybe a month ago, where I sort of solidified the Dionysus Beowulf shield build. And then fast forward to about now, where I have been pushing Flood Flare, which is like Dionysus, but more reliable and probably not as crazy a top end. It can't get as powerful, but it's still very, very powerful and very, very fast. And that's how I And that's my story of Beowulf. So I have a long history with Beowulf and developing the latest and greatest in Beowulf technology, at least for speedrunning. I don't know how it is in high heat, but that's my favorite aspect for myriad reasons.
Definitely answered the question well, and I believe that the tendency is leaning towards Flood Flare just because it's easier to get Mirage Shot. I don't know when people in the 50s are going to have a different answer, because you don't really get duos above 50. That's just not a thing that happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, when people start taking routine inspection on purpose, I don't know what happens there as far as what builds look like. I imagine that Flood Flare is still just the way to go, but I couldn't tell you.
No idea.
Yeah.
I can't tell you either.
Yep.
The rules are so different.
Yeah, it's effectively a different game. Favorite character?
I mean, I have these questions in front of me. I've known them ahead of time, but I didn't think about them. Favorite character? Let's see. People are expecting like an answer like Dusa or something, because, you know, she's adorable and all that stuff, and she pretty cool. However, I will not pick Dusa, because I don't think that's my favorite character. My favorite character is probably Theseus.
Really? The iconoclastic answer. Show your work.
Yeah. Theseus is one of the very few characters who really seems to be having a good time.
Okay. Okay.
Name someone else who's having more fun in the context of Hades than Theseus. Maybe Alecto. Maybe. She's having perhaps as much fun, but it's kind of mean-spirited. Theseus is kind of mean-spirited too, but it's driven more by a sort of, you know, a sensibility that I think we can all appreciate. You know, he views Zagreus as like a spawn of hell, and he's evil and stuff. And gosh darn it, I'm gonna clear this guy from the face of the earth, and I'm gonna have fun doing it. And my buddy is gonna help me, and the crowd's gonna have a great time, and I'm gonna have a great time. And yeah, I mean, you've gotta give the guy credit where it's due. He's enjoying himself. He's fighting for what he believes in, and he's entertaining hundreds and hundreds of souls. Like, is that not the ultimate speedrunner mentality? I think so.
I can't even argue with that. And you know what? He's not afraid of what other people think. He wears this mask even if other people think it looks goofy. You know what? He likes the mask. He's going to do what he wants. I respect that. Okay. I respect that.
Reasonable. That's right.
Do you have like a comfort build or fun run config that I know you've played a lot of Hades, and at this point, I am guessing there's not quite the same pull to just do one more run when you've done a lot of one more runs, but is there a particular comfort build that you're like, this is fun. I know this and I don't have to think too hard about it.
Comfort build or fun run? It's a good question. If I want to go fast, you can just slap on Eris.
Yeah.
But I'll sort of third verse, same as the first, I guess. Beowulf, it's a weapon I understand very well, and it's also a weapon that not many people understand well, at least in a speedrunning context. In any case, it's obviously like most top speedrunners can and play it at a very high level. But you know, if you sort of go from like the absolute fastest to like anyone else who's not trying to push world record or like close to world record speeds, like me or Dunk or Vareem, you'll find that they'll tend to gravitate towards weapons like Eris, where there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, literature on it. There are a lot of Eris runs. It's a well-understood weapon. It's same thing with Fists. Like when I coach people, the story is usually, okay, I know how to play Eris Rail. I'm also pretty good with the Fists, and I don't know any other weapon. And so
I feel personally attacked. This is a personal attack.
It's okay. It's not atypical, because they're both they're both weapons that are pretty straightforward and well understood. They're obviously mechanical details, or
there's skill involved in both weapons, but also yesterday when we did our coaching, and I'm like, all right, Demeter Fist, Athena on attack, Athena on dash, nothing can hurt me. It's fine. Whereas then we did Beowulf and I died to a Roman Elysium. Like, it's the skill cap is really high on Beowulf, and it's nice to be good at something that's hard. Like, that's a cool thing. And also you're really good at it. And hey, you just got the world record on Beowulf, so congratulations. That was quite the run.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, Beowulf is my answer for that. It's my comfort zone. I think that I show off the weapon pretty well. Someone like Dunk, who's a world record holder for all weapons, his is sort of Achilles because he's really, really good at Achilles.
So, most hated enemy.
I'm assuming you mean most hated enemy variant in
it's
Hades?
The thing that you least want to see in a room.
Okay. All right. I think that I at least want to see. I mean, I can think of specific kinds of rooms. Like, I don't want to see Barge. Is Thanatos considered an enemy?
He is the enemy of RTA?
He is the enemy of RTA. If there's an enemy variant that I can say I really dislike seeing, it's probably either... It's got to be between Unarmored Bloodless, the skeletons, the white skeletons you'll see in Asphodel, or Unarmored Swordsman. You can find Bright Swords, the guys you can find in Elysium. Neither of them are worth a ton of room difficulty points, which means that you'll see a lot more of them, because the room's like, hey, the room's this difficult, these guys are worth not that much, so we'll spawn a lot of them for you. And they slow things down tremendously. So those guys suck. And on top of that, it probably leans more towards the Bright Swords now that I'm thinking about it. Because the Bright Swords, in addition to being obnoxious in terms of filling up, in terms of being kind of difficult to kill, and there are many of them, they also don't get hit stunned in the same way that other units do. You can hit them and they'll immediately attack you back. I'm assuming this is designed on purpose by Supergiant to annoy people like me. And it does annoy me, especially in like fresh file runs where you have fewer tools and those snap responses from the swordsman are very, very punishing if you're even slightly out of position. So,
yeah. And they hit swords. Hard. Yeah. So mission accomplished, Supergiant. You did it. All right. And so we have a brief section here for build bragging. You've been doing more, I think, coaching than playing lately, but is there any particular run that you want to highlight? I think your Bayo world record would be the one that I would speak to. But of course, whatever you want to bring.
I mean, it's a shame that we keep talking about this. We keep playing the same note, but I think
it's exciting. It's okay. It's
yeah.
You know, and this is a game where I've learned the volume of depth. There are players that will play one weapon for 300, 400 hours, and you will see the fruits of that labor more so than other games. Like, there is value in learning those play patterns.
Yes. I guess Beowulf would be it for me. I got a 14 minute and 27 second Beowulf run, which for anyone who doesn't know is really fast.
Yeah, that's real time, not clear time. That's real time.
Yeah, real time. So from the start of when you have control over Zagreus to the moment you kill Hades, took me 14 minutes, 27 seconds. And for context, you know, I tell most people, hey, if you're playing for RTA, a good goal for you to start with is try to get your run under 20 minutes. If you want to be really competitive, you want to get about, you know, 16 minutes, 30 seconds, low 17 minutes. That's pretty fast. If you get to like low 16s, low 15, or even 15, that's fast. So 14, 27, really fast. And the in-game time was 6:51 as well. Woo. So that run was pretty good. It's on my YouTube. A lot of things went right. We got pretty lucky in a lot of areas. I think I also played it pretty well. I could have played it better. I did a review of it actually on a stream just a while back where I talked about how I like things that went really well, things that I thought I did really well, but also the little mechanical things that I could have done better to shave off you know, half a second, the kinds of mistakes that I made. So it could have been faster, obviously, but, you know, y'all make mistakes.
Yes, that foolish human failure thing that happens sometimes. But yeah, 6:51 and 14:35 are both, like, insane times. So, well done.
Yeah.
And this segues pretty well into our topic of the week of entering the speedrunning world. So, kind of wanting to get an idea of getting started in speedrunning. We've had Washington the Wind was on, and he's a friend of mine that comes from the Hearthstone world. You know, we're definitely on the amateur kind of learning at 1.0 and figuring it out. But you have been in the speedrunning world for a while, and I was kind of wondering where you see the different levels of getting involved and some common roadblocks that people run into.
So a lot of it is knowledge, just general game knowledge. There's a lot that the game tells you, of course, but there's also a significant amount that is hidden, such that you can only really figure it out either intuitively in a very uncertain but kind of, I think this is how this kind of works sort of way, or you can figure out in a very, you know, concrete sort of way, such as, say, having one of the modders in the game look into the code and say, okay, this is how this works. So absolutely, if you do this, then this will happen. So for instance, the concept of having a boon pool, you know, once you get four gods, excluding Hermes and Chaos, into your pool, the game will stop offering you all other kinds of gods, and you'll just be offered one of those four gods in any given like chamber or boon offering from Charon or what have you. And you might have known this intuitively. You're like, oh, okay, once I get, like, if I, but you might think, okay, if I add a god to my pool, that makes it more likely for me to see them, which is basically how that shakes out to, which is right, sort of, but also kind of wrong. And there's a lot of, like, weird details. So, like, you have to get all four of your boon pool slots filled before you start changing the likelihood of which gods you see, for instance, which, again, the game doesn't tell you. And you wouldn't know that until someone had told you. And we don't have a ton of resources. Like, we have something readable on speedrun.com. If you go under resources, there's a nice written guide compiled by Guardian Reborn. And there's a lot of just raw information that you can look at there. And anyone in the Discord will tell you. But yeah, the biggest initial wall is just having those sorts of, that sort of knowledge, having a, what's the word, heuristic, I guess, for the heuristics or best practices for what to do in any given situation, like taking free rooms.
I guess heuristic's the best word. Like, for having a knowledge base that that kind of covers the, there are things that are the high level runners just do at this point that are part of their habits.
Yeah, knowing what good habits there are to engage in. Like, yeah, if you come across a trove with money in it, you might be inclined to take it as a player because, hey, more money is more power. But it also takes time, and that power may not be worth the time you spend to get it. So
yeah,
that would be something you just sort of automatically skip in your mind. Or if you see the mid shop, the middle shop in a biome, you're like, okay, I have to take this. Like, this is something I should take no matter what. You don't even consider the other side, although that's not always true, but you know, stuff like that.
Yes, you usually don't. Well, so you consider it, but the weighting there, it's about recalibrating kind of the cost benefit analysis to every decision.
Exactly. Yeah.
In a way that happens quickly enough that, you know, every second spent thinking about it is a second lost. And so making sure that I guess it would be your kind of internal algorithm for which room do I take is finely tuned.
Yeah.
So, is there, like, if someone were looking to get into running, is it better to pick a particular weapon and start on that? And if so, which weapons do you recommend? Or is it better just go variety?
If you want to get into speedrunning, I would probably recommend visiting the speedrunning page and thumbing through the top runs. Most of them are Eris Rail for a good reason. Eris Rail is just very, very consistent. It gives you global damage for a very low cost, and making everything stronger is fast. And the way it happens is, I think, pretty transparent as well. You get Zeus attack and Poseidon dash, and you scale that base damage with the natural damage that Ares provides, and then you just kill things. Some weapons are way easier to use than others, and it just so happens that the easier weapon to use, in this case, also happens to be the fastest, or at the very least the most visible that we can see. Hestia is up there as well for some reason.
Yeah, out of the top 10, 8 are Eris, 1 is Hestia, 2nd place, shout out to Lily, and yep. Demeter is 1, and shout out to Ananke. And that's it. Like, it's Eris, 1 yep. Hestia, 1 Demeter, and then the next one is Hestia, and then...
Beowulf will be there soon when they yep. finally approve the run, but...
Yes, Beowulf will now. Be the combo breaker, and then the highest that's not one of those three outside of that right now is Cyntowin in 12th place with Nemesis of all things.
Nemesis Sword, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the so it looks like speedrunning, at least at the very highest level, is a little homogenous. So I will say when you scroll down, and still, if you're looking for sub 10, there are a lot of options. If you're looking for top 10 on the board, so far it looks like that's a little bit different.
Yeah, any weapon can get sub 10. I don't think that there's a single weapon that can't. And you can get that reliably is a strong word because there are a lot of, again, factors that are, you know, RNG-based that you have to contend with as a player. But in terms of throwing consistency out the window for a moment, any weapon can get there. So if you have a weapon that you really like and you want to play it quickly, there's probably a run on the board. If not on the current patch, which is like 1.37 plus or something like that, you can go back to before then, and there are a huge variety of runs that you can find. A lot of them by Bablo. Some of the methods that we use have changed very slightly, but the principles are all very much the same. So if you want to learn how to make your weapon, your favorite weapon, go fast, you just go to the speedrun boards. At the very least, go to the 1.0 patch. But you know, who knows what'll be uploaded by the time this gets released. So and search by your favorite aspect and see what kind of times there are, see if the play style lines up with yours, see what you can learn from it, and you know, you'll at least have a place to start.
I'm scrolling right now. Nice Lucifer run, by the way. Yeah, it's Lucifer and Chiron are the two that I was thinking that might be on the slower side, but
Lucifer is actually pretty fast. Believe it or not, Webb's 2D, if that name means anything to you, he's actually going to be my next opponent in the Hermes Cup on the 15th of January. He's really fast with Lucifer. He really likes it, and he makes good use of it. So it's, and a lot of weapons are very, very fast. Just some have more consistency going for them with others. So on a time level, it makes more sense to spend that time on certain weapons over others.
So... are there any things that you wish you knew when you got into speedrunning that would be, I guess, would be a piece of advice you'd give up front now?
You mean just like a single piece of information or like a more of a direction
Either.
I can point people into?
Is the sort of thing that if you had been informed of something when you were doing your first speedrun ever, that would have saved you time in either personal growth or just actually execution. Is there something that you think that you would go back in time and tell yourself? It's a big question, I know.
It's knowledge is so... Like if I had to tell someone one thing, I guess we play better, but I don't know. It's not terribly helpful. There's no single thing that I can think of as sort of terribly impactful. There's obviously a conglomeration of information that I would want to dump upon myself, which I try to sort of dump on others. But you know, like my coaching sessions tend to last about 3 hours, and it takes about 3 hours to get, I think, enough information into someone who doesn't know that information for it to be meaningful. And usually afterwards, people will report that, hey, my PB has gone down by a whole lot because, you know, I learned this stuff that, you know, the game doesn't tell you. And that's, that you can't really even learn by looking, which is like one of the really hard parts about something that, you know, by nature of it is fast and therefore hard to keep up with. You don't know what questions to ask. You don't know, like, I mean, you can ask general questions like, you know, why did you take this room over this one? Or, like, like, what? Why this bill? Why do you choose this boon? And there's like a very general answer that we can give, but you know, there's also a lot of detail that we can go into, such that not only do I answer this question that you have now, but I'll answer all of the many little iterations of this question that you'll have in the many little moments that you have when you play Hades, which is where the real knowledge comes from. That's a really long answer to a pretty simple question.
No, but that's good, because this segues... We'll take a bit of a different approach, because I think this plays more into your skill set. Something that you are very clearly passionate about, and something that you have pursued as an individual, both as a recipient and a giver, is continuous personal growth as a player and as a community member. And you've been doing free coaching sessions loaded with information for people. It seems that a passion of yours is, how do you optimize personal growth? So in terms of both as a recipient of the knowledge, how have you found that it's been the best way to set yourself up for that improvement? I think that your previous tip of watch what other people are doing that are better than you to learn what you're not doing. That basis, what's kind of the next step to set yourself up to personally improve, either in a Hades context or just in general?
For the Hades answer, it's ask questions. And a lot of people, I think, feel really free to ask, at least in the Discord. It seems like a fairly common experience to watch something like the Hermes Cup, and for some people to be saying, like, this is such a different game from the game that I'm playing, right? You know, my runs take me like 30 minutes to get through in-game time, and I get to Hades and I'm super nervous, and it's always stressful or something. And so, honestly, the best way to, I guess, lifting that veil is to ask questions, ask for explanations. A lot of the players in the game are knowledgeable, both of like the game, but also that this veil exists. So when you ask a question like, you know, why do you choose this room over that room? Very often we'll answer that question, but then, as I said before, we'll also answer sort of the questions around, like the questions you don't know to ask, right? Or the questions that may not occur to you because, you know, you've just started to interrogate the subject. So, but the best I can do is like ask people who are knowledgeable, and this is true in every walk of life, right? Like usually if someone's knowledgeable about something and you ask a question, you'll usually get more than just the answer that you were looking for. If that person is knowledgeable and hopefully at the very least decent as a person, and they don't withhold the other relevant information from you. We won't always, because you know it is hard to go into like a 5-minute detailed discussion on a certain question over and over and over again, which is why, you know, sometimes we'll have, you know, frequently asked questions commands. Like people ask us, why do you run heat on your speed runs? Wouldn't it be easier to have no heat? And a lot of us will have like a why heat command in Twitch chat. You can type it and they'll give you a little paragraph. And if there's something you don't understand about it, then you can ask or something. Ask questions.
Yeah. Well, and the high level players that have been doing this for a while, especially there have been people getting into Hades in various waves, the largest of which was 1.0, but in various different waves over the years, right? Like since the Steam release was probably a big one over EGS. And then like the various patches and all that, and then 1.0 is a tidal wave.
Cross saves, right?
Yeah, cross saves finally, thank goodness. The high level players know, if you are asking this question, I am aware of what it means about what else you don't know, because a lot of times asking a question indicates just that lack of familiarity in a very specific way that's pretty consistent. And so What it sounds like you're saying is both research, swallow your pride, ask the questions, and then play a lot. That's kind of what I'm getting.
It boils down to that, I guess. It's, yeah, in fewer words and in a far more disappointing sort of, I have to do stuff and learn and then practice. But I mean, we're also, as I said, we're super welcoming. We want more people to play. And so if you want to get better, we will help you as much as we can.
And so far, my experience has been in every Hades Discord that I've come into, everyone has been super welcoming and super conversational. It's a really, really inclusive community, and people just want to share what they know. Like, they want more people to get involved. That's been true to a fault with everyone that I've interacted with. And, you know, you've been on the heat side and the speed side, and, like, there's no one here that's like, you're not good enough. That hasn't come up. It's everyone seems to be really focused on the rising tide floating all boats, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know how it is in other speedrunning communities. I feel as though this must be true for most speedrunning communities, since speedrunning is already pretty niche. So even though I think it would be nice to, if we told ourselves that this is all altruistic, it is also sort of a self-preservation move as well, because, you know, the more people who are active, the more likely this community is to, you know, stay alive and continue to be active, and we'll have an audience and things to do and reasons to have our knowledge and use our knowledge. So it's as with like my involvement in, or my presence in, you know, all the Discords, you know, it, a part of it's, you know, because I like hanging out with people and they're my friends and stuff, but it's also a little bit professional as well. So there's this and then there's that. I don't want to make it seem as though this is like a, oh, it's all just, you know, like pure angels who are trying to spread their knowledge for the sake of spreading knowledge. It's one thing and another, right? I guess I can't speak for everyone, but for me, that, like, those are sort of equal motivations for wanting to get people in, as impersonal as it might sound. I think it's worth acknowledging that, you know, and speedrunning is niche, and having more people will sort of solidify and ensure a longevity of the community. And I don't want it to die out because I like it.
Yeah. More people playing the game means the game gets to be played more, and that's cool. And so, like, nothing wrong with that. But also, I would not call that a sinister motive, as it were.
Of course not.
Well, Riss, thank you so much for coming on. I know you have some projects in the work, so where can we find you if we want to chat, and any shout-outs or plugs you want to give here?
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Appreciate it. Where can you find me? You can mostly find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/wrist13 with an E after the wrist. I'll be streaming a whole bunch of random stuff. I'm trying to get a little bit more variety in my diet. Streaming Hades, but I also like to stream a little bit of Slay the Spire or whatever other game I like to play. I stream coaching sessions. I'll like occasionally do a VOD review. I did some of those for my Christmas stream, and that was just kind of chill. You can find me on YouTube as well. If you just search in Wrist13, you should be able to find me, no problem. And I'll have, you know, VODs from my stream sort of uploaded there. Usually a world of records or PBs, but sometimes they're just, you know, the odd run that I found fun. And hopefully coming next year, I'll make some guides. So, but no promises there.
It's an intention. And so we can reflect and appreciate the intention. And for those of you that haven't seen Riss' Intro to Speedrunning guide on YouTube, still good. There's some things that have changed a little bit, but I think
some of it's a little bit outdated, but yeah, the fundamentals are still there.
Yeah, the basics are they will still help you if you have not seen the video before and are just getting into speedrunning. So definitely recommend it. And yeah, and thank you so much, everyone, for listening. You can follow the show at Hidden Aspects on Twitter, subscribe in your podcast client, join our Discord. Feel free to leave an iTunes review if you have the time. It really helps other people find the show. And until next week, we'll see you in hell.